Good evening, Tony. Hello, this is Manfred Petrich. I'm calling from the Republic of Abkhazia on the Black Sea. And I've been in the banking business for 40 years in Switzerland. I'm retired now. And I've been blogging for the last 20 years, doing international topics, politics. And I would call myself an alternative media guy.
So are you, do you think, Swiss or German, or are you from, yeah, because I think you were born in South America, weren't you?
Well, I was born in Argentina, but I only spent 1 year there. The rest of the time I spent in Europe, in Austria, Germany and Switzerland, mainly in Switzerland.
Tell us, what's the difference between Switzerland and Germany? Is there much real difference?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The Swiss German, the Germans don't understand our language.
Okay, so
let's put it this way. It's a bit similar, like between the Scottish and the English and the Irish and the Welsh.
Right. Well, we do understand the Welsh generally, unless they're talking Celtic. But anyway, look, you're someone that spent many years in high finance. Give us an idea of a couple of deals that you did, or, you know, the sorts of wheeler dealing you were doing. Because I think for many people, this is ivory towers that are way, you know, distant from our experience.
Well, I was in the so-called investment banking, which is completely different to retail banking. Retail banking is what you do. That's when you bring money to and put it on your savings account and stuff like that, and go and get some cash. That's retail banking. Or you get a credit for your house or things like that. That's what we call retail banking. But I was in investment banking. Investment banking is completely different. There, it's about, to make profit with speculation. That means you play with money and you move huge sums, depending on sums. A lot of orders are from customers, but you do also a lot of them yourself. So I was for a long time a foreign exchange dealer. So I was dealing in foreign currencies, dollar Deutschmarks, dollar pound, dollar Swiss francs, things like that. And we were doing huge sums, you know. I mean, there were billions per day.
Yeah, but this is gambling, really, isn't it?
Well, it depends. Most of the time we were front running. That means you got an order from a big corporation to buy $100 million. And what we did then, before we put that order in, we bought ourselves dollars. And then we put in the order, the rate went up, and then we sold. So we made a profit out of these things.
Okay, so how does someone get into that? I mean, it's obviously lots of money to be made doing that sort of thing. And we had a whole tradition in London in the 1980s and 90s of kids coming straight out of school, going into the city and making a fortune. How did you get into it?
How did I get into it? That's a good question. Well, actually, I can't even remember how I got into it. I just worked for the bank, for the one of the largest American banks, who had its one of his offices in Zurich, and actually, I got into the IT department there, right? And but because I could speak very good English, and English is the language in trading, they put me onto the trading desk. And you see, to be a trader has nothing to do with the normal banking business. The best prerequisite is if you were a car salesman. You understand? Or selling horses. So you have to be... Yeah, you know, you have to be very quick in buying and selling and things like that. Just like in the cars, in the car selling business, you know, when you sell used cars.
Okay. So you left, didn't you? You left Switzerland and you're now in Abkhazia. There's been lots of... I mean, people that don't know, Abkhazia is on the east coast of the Black Sea. And there's been quite a lot of tension in the Black Sea. We had a British destroyer sailing very close to Crimea. What do you make of that incident? Because there's, you know, the way it was spun here is actually there were some parts of the Foreign Office that thought it was a bad thing to do, but Boris Johnson said we're going to do it anyway.
Well, I think it's an absolute stupid thing to do because you're provoking the Russian bear. And the Russians have signaled at the latest when they moved 100,000 troops to the border to Ukraine, because the Ukrainian army moved towards Donbass, that they are not going to take any shit anymore. There are red lines that you're not allowed to cross, and one of them is that you're not allowed to enter Russian territorial waters. And that's what the Defender did. The HMS Defender crossed into Russian's waters.
And well, they say Ukrainian waters.
Well, look, it's not Ukrainian waters because the Crimea belongs to Russia.
Referendum.
Referendum. And 90% of the people in Crimea voted to join Russia. So that's absolutely democratically, you know, you can't discuss this thing anymore. It's legal, finished, you know, and the West and the Ukraine are just sore losers, right? I mean, it's like talking about football. Why did we lose the game? You lost and live with it. Right? And it's no use saying this belongs, you know, you refuse reality. You refuse reality. And what has happened now is that all the major Russian politicians have said, if you do this again, dear British, we will sink your ship. And they mean it.
Well, yes, but of course the British have got their own attitude. Maybe they're slightly influenced by the Americans. What they're saying is, well, it's okay for Putin to move his troops up to the border to try and scare us, but we don't care.
Well, then they are absolutely without responsibility. The British government is obviously reckless, a reckless driver, obviously pissed, under drugs or alcohol, and endangering Great Britain. Because Vladimir Putin said regarding this incident that it was a blatant provocation carried out with the United States participation. He noted that he did not think the world was on the brink of World War III, claiming that a large-scale conflict would not have started even if the Russian side had sunk the destroyer. Now, why does he think that a World War III would not have started? Because the NATO is not able to do anything. They couldn't fight their way out of a wet paper bag.
Yeah, but they've got nuclear weapons, Manfred.
So what? Russia too? Russia has the most weapons, nuclear weapons, and they have much more sophisticated weapons than the West, especially hypersonic rockets that can go through all air defenses. And on the other hand, Russia has the best air defense. So let's see which rockets come into their target.
Well, yeah, okay. So what was the point of what they did then? There must be some reason for it.
Well, it's these hawks, you know, these neocons, who always want to have a war somewhere. And if they finish the war in Afghanistan, they have to start another one somewhere, right? It's always these wars.
Well, right? we've had a lot of trouble with Russia over the centuries. It goes back quite a long way. Why is it? We're getting lots and lots of propaganda, for example.
What do you mean trouble with Russia? What the hell has the British troops had to do at Trafalgar in the Crimea? Who were they defending? Well, they were not defending the British nation.
Well, no, but...
It's Russian territory. Always has been.
There seems to have been this, I mean, you might call it Russophobia, but there's certainly been an animosity over the centuries with the French, Napoleon, you know, with Hitler and Russia. And at some point, surely, you know, we have to face up to the fact that Russia is there and it's not going away.
That's right. And I'm sick and tired of the British and the Americans always putting themselves as the nice guys who only want peace. Actually, they're the biggest warmongers and have always been the biggest warmongers everywhere since hundreds of years.
Well, I know you're speaking as a German. We've had two world wars with
the Germans. I'm not German.
Well, all right. Swiss. Okay, Swiss-German. But there's been a lot of history, hasn't there, of this over the last hundred and so years. I know for a fact that we had, for example, our king. He was very much pro-Nazi, King Edward VIII. And we also had Montague Norman, who was the governor of the Bank of England most of the way through the Second World War, who very much supported Hitler. He was an ideological supporter of the Nazi Party. And yet, at some point, everything changed. So there was a lot of support in the 1930s for Hitler. The British establishment saw him as a bulwark against Soviet Russia. And then everything changed. So what is going on? Because we need to understand this if we want to stop another world war.
You see, what the West does not accept is that the Russian resources, that they cannot rob the Russian resources. That's what they always wanted to do. These huge, biggest resources of energy, of all the metals that you need, etc., etc., are in Russia, and they want access to it. They want to rob that. So that's what they have always been wanting to do.
Yeah, well, they can just buy them off the Russians, can't they?
Oh yeah, but why do they go and steal the oil from the Arabs? You know, the Americans have the attitude, how does our oil get under Arabian sand? They say that's our oil. Look, they're in Syria. The Americans are in Syria stealing the Syrian oil. Instead of giving it to the people there, the earnings of the oil, so that the people of Syria can live. The Americans are stealing the oil and taking it out through Turkey, through NATO member Turkey. Right? What business is that of America? But they think they can control and rob everybody of everything. The same with Venezuela. Why do they want to topple?
Well,
Maduro.
I'll tell you why. It's because lots of top Nazis scooted over to the United States after World War II as part of Operation Paperclip and other operations.
Yeah, but they're all dead since long time.
But they set America on this course, which led to the death of President Kennedy and to where we are today.
What do you mean? You think the Nazis attacking Venezuela?
No, not now, no. All I'm saying is I think that, you know, that there was the Americans seem to have picked up this whole thing that Hitler had in the late 30s, which was I could just invade any country I feel like.
No. You're forgetting something. You're forgetting the Spanish-American War, 1898, and the Cuba, where they did a false flag attack on an American ship. On their own ship in the harbor of Havana, and they sank it they blew it up themselves and blamed it on the Spanish, and then they started an imperial war against Spain, and that's how they got all these Spanish islands everywhere in the Caribbean and also the Philippines and all the other islands in the Pacific. They were all Spanish islands, Spanish colonies, and that's how the Americans got them all.
Okay, so from your point of view, you know, the British were certainly involved, weren't they, in, you know, partly in encouraging the Second World War to take place. And what do you make of what was really going on there? I mentioned two powerful people. One is the governor of the Bank of England. The other was the king, who were very much sort of trying to get Nazi Germany going, very pro-Hitler. And yet all of a sudden everything changed. And when Hitler invaded Poland and the Russians invaded Poland, that was it. So give us your view of what the real forces behind the Second World War.
The British establishment, British finance and American finance, because war is the most profitable thing in the world is war. That's how you make the most money. Right.
Well, I suppose you grab resources as well as you sell weapons, don't you?
Yeah, and what happened was that they and their policy is and has always been to separate Germany from Russia. Don't forget that in the First World War, as long as Germany, the German Reich, was waging a war against the Russian Tsar in the east, all the American press was pro-German, because they were fighting the Russians. And when the Russians capitulated and the Germans won and then could move all the troops from the east to the Western Front, and then they went to the British and said, look, we've won the war, let's stop this whole thing. And the British were nearly prepared to do a peace treaty with the Germans in 1916, because they were absolutely destroyed in France. What happened was that then a certain group of people went up to the British government and said, what do we get if we make you win the war? And then the British government said, you can have anything. And out of that came the Balfour Declaration. And the Balfour Declaration means that the Zionists got as a present Palestine from the British government, which was the occupying force at that time in Palestine. And the American press changed overnight from pro-German to anti-German. Because who controlled the American press? You can guess three times. And that's why Germany lost the war, when the Americans then joined the war in the First World War. Otherwise, if the Americans wouldn't have joined, Germany would have won. They won anyway in 1916. The British were prepared to a peace treaty. You see, the Germans never understood. How is it possible that we lost the war without one single foreign troop entering our territory? Not one British soldier or French soldier entered Germany in the First World War. Not one. So how could they lose the war if there was never a foreign soldier on their territory?
Well, that's a good question.
Right? And that's why the Germans were pissed off. And that's how also the whole thing with the Second World War started.
Well, it was the Treaty of Versailles was very punitive, and Germany was in a terrible, basically on its knees economically, had hyperinflation where the money suddenly was worth nothing the next day. This did actually create the perfect environment for someone like Hitler to come along, didn't it?
Well,
I mean, the people saw him.
Look, I don't know if I'm allowed to tell you this here on the radio, But one question that nobody asks is, why did the Nazis hate the Jews? Why? It has nothing to do with racism. Because in the fascist ideology, there is no racism. Because, for instance, in under Mussolini in Italy, and he was the inventor of fascism, not one single Jew was killed. Not one. So why did the Germans hate the Jews? Well, I just told you before, because they caused Germany to lose the First World War by bringing in the Americans and getting Palestine as a reward from the British in the Balfour, with the Balfour Declaration. That's the reason.
And I mean, there was a very strong anti-Nazi boycott, particularly in the United States, before the Second World War. And yet the Zionists did a deal, didn't they? They broke the boycott.
Well, there was there were many treaties between the Zionists and the Nazis regarding immigration of Jews out of Germany, and they could take all their stuff with them. Shiploads of personal items were shipped to Palestine, and they could leave Germany. Jews could leave Germany until 1939, until the 1st of September 1939. All Jews could leave. It was no problem.
Yeah, well, why should they have to leave?
Because, I just told you, because they caused that Germany lost the First World War.
Well, yeah, but hang on, it wasn't those Jews, was it? I mean, you can't surely be blaming all of the Jews. I mean, that was one of the unhinged things about Hitler, is he was saying that all the Jews are responsible for this. Actually, it was the finance people and the people who'd been, you know, involved in Versailles that had done it.
Yes. But I can tell you one thing. Let's say you in Great Britain accept that a couple of million, I don't know, Pakistanis can come into Britain and they are accepted there and they can do business there and they are treated like equals and everything. And then Great Britain goes into a war. I don't know with whom, let's say with France, I don't care. And then you lose the war and then you find out that the Pakistanis, who you accepted and treated as equals and they could do everything, were the traitors who caused you to lose the war. What do you think will happen with the Pakistanis in Great Britain? I can tell you what will happen. They will hang at the next tree.
Well, that's possible. Anyway, so...
Don't tell me things like, well, it wasn't all of them. This is the most stupid argument I've ever heard. That's the same as saying, well, not all Muslims are terrorists. So what? Those who don't... The majority of the Muslims do nothing against the terrorists, right?
Well, they
just
hang on, Manfred, because let me just stick up for the Muslims for a minute. For example, the Muslims in Britain, in Birmingham, in London and in Bristol on different occasions have actually turned over people who are extremists to the police, who've then been put on trial and sent to prison. So they couldn't get their act together to do some sort of crazy thing because
excuse me. Those people that you now describe as Muslims are not Muslims. And I can prove why. Because in the Quran it says you are allowed to chop off the heads of Christians and Jews. It says it there. And also the prayer that they pray five times a day says, please Allah, do us, make us not like Christians and Jews. They say this five times a day.
Well, I suppose that's because they're Muslims, not Christians or Jews.
Yeah, but that shows how they hate us.
Well, I don't know. No, I don't really agree with that.
We have a prayer where it says, God, please don't make me like a Muslim. Come on.
Well, I don't think that's the same as hate.
Absolutely. I mean, it says in the Quran that Muhammad killed 800 Jews during some conflict. And that you are, and it says the only way to go directly into heaven is by doing a suicide attack, a jihad suicide attack. That's the only way you get directly into heaven.
Well, I don't think many people believe that. But anyway, look, can we just get on?
It says, and if you don't believe it, you're not a Muslim.
Well, I don't know. Well, yeah, I mean, this is very, I think it's a bit dangerous, actually, for anyone who's not part of a particular faith to just say that they can tell you what is the rights and wrongs of that faith. So, you know, you'd really want to have a Muslim giving their point of view if you were to say, you know, things like that. I mean, I think you've got to have someone who is part of the faith who would. You know, I don't think that all Muslims are terrorists at all. You know, so I think that's just not true.
And what I'm trying to say is, you're only a real Muslim if you're a terrorist. Right. If you're not a terrorist, you're not a real Muslim because you're not following the Quran.
Well, they have a jihad, don't they? Which is basically like a spiritual warfare, a spiritual fight. So that really means that you've got to stick to your moral values and not be bullied and pushed around like so many people have been during COVID.
What's that got to do with blowing yourself up and killing a lot of civilians on the internet?
Well, nothing, no. And also, most of the gangs of so-called Muslims have been orchestrated by NATO intelligence services, and Operation Cyclone, ever since the 1980s, have been funded by the Saudis.
Yes, they use... They use this basic ideology for their cause, yes. But the
infiltrated it and twisted it.
Yeah, that's right, but they use it. They use it for their purposes.
Well, if you remember, the Christian crusaders in medieval times used and twisted the Bible in order to go and conquer the Holy Land, didn't they?
They didn't conquer the Holy Land. They just freed it from the Muslims who were blocking the holy sites and the churches that you couldn't get to anymore. Right.
Well, they actually massacred people. But anyway, look, let's come up to today because we've really got to get your handle on COVID. I remember right at the beginning of all this, you said something which I shall never forget, which was, do you wonder if Putin released this virus just to finish off the West's economy?
Well, actually, it was not Putin. I said, I meant China. That China released it, right? Because they did it on themselves. You know, they released it on themselves, so that would be the perfect excuse that it's not them, kind of. You know, because we were first, we got it. We were victims first, therefore it can't be us. Right.
Well, it could be if they had accidentally released it from the Wuhan virology lab.
Well, it's not accidental. That was my statement, that it was provoked. It was on purpose to destroy the economy of the world, and China coming out as number one. And if you look now, the last 1.5 years has actually turned out that way. Because the Chinese economy is roaring like hell and all other economies are going down the drain. Right? Especially an American economy.
Well, a big empire like the US, which is a fantastically powerful financial empire, and of course their language, their media is very infectious around the world. They've got a lot of soft power in that way too. But the thing is, it looks like the American Empire is coming to an end. And when that happens, these powerful big militaries, etc., the Pentagon, they could potentially be quite dangerous.
Well, that's the guy who is drowning, and he is hitting all around him because he's drowning, right? So anybody who wants to save him is in danger because he will be hit by the drowning person. Or you say, well, if I go down, I will see that I will take a lot of people with me, or a lot of countries with me, right? I mean, that could be. No, I definitely, look, you see what happened now with Afghanistan. I mean, what kind of a military is the American military that fights a war 20 years and cannot win against a couple of turban wearers who have nothing except for Kalashnikovs? They have no air force. They have no navy. They have no ballistic missiles. They have no helicopters. They have nothing. And they beat the Americans? How is that? That shows you how weak the Americans are. They haven't won a war since the Second World War, and even that they didn't win. They lost in Korea. They lost in Vietnam. Now they're losing in Afghanistan. They lost in Iraq, in Syria. They don't win any wars. Well, that has two reasons. First of all, the point is not to win a war. The point is to produce weapons, because that's business. So the longer a war goes, the better it is for business. So it's like the hospital system or the medical system. It's not, the point is not to heal people, it's to treat people. If you heal people, then they don't buy your products anymore. But if you treat them, they are endless customers. And that's what happens also with war. You want endless wars that never stop. And this is happening also now with this virus. It's never going to end. It will never end. They will always come up with some mutant which forces you to take another version of the vaccine. Next year, the year after, they invent another problem, and it will just go on and on and on. Right? It will not stop, because it's a huge business. What people don't understand is that this corona thing is the biggest business of all, because it involves 7 billion people. Everybody on this planet. It's the biggest market that you can imagine. Because if everybody has to get two shots, that means 14 billion shots at 15 euros a shot. So you can work out how much money that is. Plus all the other things that you have to do, the tests, and the hospitalization, and all the other, and the medical people you have to pay, and so forth. That is the biggest business of all.
So, what? Who do you think is behind this? Then you just say it's the pharmaceutical industry, because it's not, is it? You're finding that there's hundreds of doctors that support this. There's also masses and masses of media and politicians.
Well, I can tell you one thing. The problem is that the media is also being subsidized with these corona help monies. I know it for sure for Switzerland, Austria, Germany. The media is getting paid by the government in subsidies, just like other branches of the economy are getting money as a damage, against the damages they're experiencing. So what do they do, of course? They write according to what the government wants. So they are just a propaganda voice piece of the government, which is pushing vaccination, which is pushing lockdowns, which is pushing masks and all that crap, you know? And that is happening. So what they are working together with the pharma industry because of the huge business. So you see, the government profits because they can get rid of democracy and put in a dictatorship. They can rule now by just giving out orders, you know. I mean, your Johnson is a dictator. He can just say, tomorrow the pubs are closed, finished, or whatever he can say. And then everybody has to follow. So he's a dictator, just like Merkel in Germany and all the other heads of state all over the place. They're all dictators. What we are experiencing is a worldwide fascist coup. That's what we are experiencing.
Well, when you use the word fascist, what do you mean?
Well, fascism is actually just another name for socialism. You see, if you look at the history of fascism and also national socialism, there is no difference between communism and fascism or national socialism. They're all the same. It's all socialism. And the only difference is that communism is international socialism and fascism is national socialism.
Yeah, but then there's a fascist international as well. And also, I mean, Britain was socialist in the 1950s. It certainly wasn't fascist. It just made sure that the basic infrastructure was run with plenty of public scrutiny and at cost so that the country could recover. So socialism doesn't have to be fascist at all.
Socialism. You didn't have socialism. You can't call Labour Party
yes,
socialists.
Yes, they were in the 1940s, late 40s and 50s. Britain was doing lots and lots of, you know, basically the whole infrastructure of the country, the roads, the housing, the water, the railways, everything was government run.
You don't understand the definition of socialism. Socialism means that everything is owned by the government and there is a plan economy. There is no more capitalism. There is a planned economy.
Well, hang on, because we had a bit of capitalism, but we did have a planned economy, and it worked, and it certainly wasn't fascist.
Well, what is dictatorship then? If the government tells you what to do, that's fascism.
Well, yes, but it was an open government, and it was, for example, you know, you paid for your water what it costs to produce it, and if they started to charge too much, everyone would moan and they'd put the price down. I mean, it was a government that was much more, you know, it wasn't authoritarian, it was serving the public. So you can have a socialist government like that.
Yeah, but that was not a real socialist government. The socialist government was East Germany or Soviet Union or China. They were socialist countries where everything was owned by the state. There was no private property. There is no private. Did you still own private property in England?
Of
yes.
Course.
Yeah. Right, and you didn't have socialism.
Okay, well, all I'll tell you is we considered it a socialist country.
Oh, you considered it, yes, but it's not by definition socialism. Socialism if you don't own anything anymore.
But there was a balance between infrastructure being run by government and people having their
property. It was half socialism. Then it was social democrats, like the German social democracy. Right? But that's not socialism. Socialism is if you don't own anything anymore and the government owns everything. That's socialism. But actually, we have socialism because if you look, all the national banks of all the Western countries, they do planned economy. because the interest rate, and I'm talking now as a banker, the interest rate and also the money supply, which are the two things that the central banks control and which is their main lever how to steer the economy, they decide in a small group of 5 or 10 people. The interest rate is not worked out on the market like it should be. In a capitalist system, interest rates should be balanced out in the market just like any other price. But it's not. A small cabal of people decides the interest rates. So that's planned economy.
Well, I know one of the big issues that's going on between the Russians and Germans and the Americans at the moment is this whole Nord Stream 2 pipeline. The idea really here is to bypass the Ukrainians, because the Ukrainian economy may actually collapse if they're not allowed to take their taxes for all the everything that's going through the pipeline, gas pipeline. So how's Nord Stream 2 going, and what do you think of the geopolitical implications of it?
Well, first of all, what nearly nobody knows is that Nord Stream is a Swiss company. It's a Swiss company in the canton of Zug. And 150 engineers work there in a high-rise office doing all the construction, you know, supervising the construction. So Nord Stream is not a German company, it's not a Russian company, it's a Swiss company. And hardly anybody knows this. I know it because I lived near there and I knew it, I saw the building. So, and the head of the chairman of the company is the former Chancellor of Germany, Schröder. He's the chairman of the company. It's a joint venture company between German energy companies and Gazprom, the Russian energy company, right? But it's a Swiss company registered in Switzerland and has a huge office there. That's the first thing. The second thing is, the reason is not only because of Ukraine, because Ukraine has been problematic in the past and stopped the gas supplies and stole the gas on its way through the pipelines and didn't pay anything for it. That was the problem. The Ukrainians robbed the gas going between Russia and Europe. And that was the big problem. And that's why the Russians and the Germans said, we have to do something so that nobody's in the middle who can take out gas without us, getting paid for this robbery. That's why they went through the North Sea, through the Baltic Sea, because it would not only involve Ukraine, it would also involve many other countries like Austria or Czech Republic or Poland. You know, there are more countries in between until it reaches Germany. So that they wanted to exclude this problem of somebody in between. That's the reason for this.
How close is it to being opening?
Well, actually, it's finished. It's the first line is finished, and Putin said a month ago in St. Petersburg at the Economic Forum that they're ready to fill it now with gas. And the second string will be finished shortly, right? And this year, it'll be finished completely. And the Americans have given up all their blackmailing. I mean, they have stopped their blackmailing, right?
What's going to happen to Ukraine now? It can't take its cut.
Well, Putin said that there are contracts for the next 3 years that gas will still go through Ukraine and that they will get their transfer fee, right? So it's not that there is no more gas going through Ukraine. right? There will be some guys going through Ukraine, and they will get some money for that, right? But the Ukrainians have proved themselves as being unreliable partners in this whole gas business, right? That's what happens. So you go the direct way. I mean, that's logic, isn't it? Anyway, it's cheaper for the consumer in Europe if nobody's in between taking their cuts. Isn't that so?
Well, I know the Russians are, they've made some big changes which haven't really been reported much to do with slowly but surely, quietly ditching dollars. Why is that significant?
Well, I wrote about it a month ago that, you see, Russia has a so-called welfare fund where they put in, it's like the Norwegian national fund.
Yeah, the sovereign wealth fund, yeah.
Yeah, they put in earnings from the gas and oil sales into this fund. To the benefit of all the Russian population, just like the Norwegian population. It's like a savings bank, you know? And this wealth fund, Russian wealth fund, was invested also in dollars and in stocks and in euros and in gold. That's what, you know, whatever you invest into, make the keep the value of the sum that you have there. And they decided a month ago to ditch the dollar, to get rid of the dollar, because they don't want to be able to be blackmailed. You see, the problem is that everything you deal, if you do business by using the dollar as a payment, is like buying oil or whatever you do. As soon as you buy the use the dollar, America, first of all, America sees what you're doing, and secondly, they can block you. Because what people don't understand is, but I can tell you this because I'm from the business, when you have dollars, these dollars are always in America, always. They're not in your London bank account. Even if you have a dollar account at Barclays Bank, these dollars are not at Barclays Bank in London. They are in New York. And if you own euros, they're in Frankfurt. And if you own Swiss francs, they're in Zurich. And if you own Japanese yen, they're in Tokyo. So whatever currency you have, foreign currency, it's always there where the currency is from. And that's why you can be blackmailed. They can just block your account and you cannot access it anymore. And that has happened so many times with the Iranian accounts.
It has, hasn't it? Yeah, it's used by the Americans just to, intimidate, blackmail, threaten people. If you deal with the Iranians, then we're going to switch your accounts off.
Exactly. And they just switched off all the .com, Iranian.com sites like PressTV.com, they switched off, you know, a couple of weeks ago.
Now, I mean, one of the things we hear of in conspiracy theory circles is the gnomes of Zurich. Now, these apparently are the sort of banking elite of the world that meet together in these smoky filled rooms and they decide the future of the whole world. Is there any truth to the gnomes of Zurich?
No, not anymore anyway. That used to be like that, but not anymore. It's a long time ago that these are cliches that are half truths, cliches. And they are certainly not true since at least 15 years, right? You see, before, a lot of wealth management was done in through Swiss banks. That was their speciality, wealth management. That means you brought your wealth to Switzerland, and the Swiss bankers took care of it and looked at it's secure and that it gets gains in value. That was their main job, and they didn't ask questions. But that has all changed because the Swiss have completely collapsed to the pressure and blackmailing of the American tax department and also Europe, EU. You see, they inform about everything, each other.
Well, that's so good, isn't it? That's good, surely, because we don't want people being able to put all their wealth into a tax haven like Switzerland and keep it secretly.
Why not?
Well, because you can't tax it then.
So? Is it a crime? Is it a crime to avoid taxes?
Well, it depends what the law is. Obviously, if you move it abroad, I mean, for example, some of the biggest crooks in Bristol, they're resident in the Channel Islands so that they don't have to pay any tax. And though they're very wealthy, so the taxes have begun to fall on the poor rather than the rich.
Well, who created this loophole that the crown dependencies are not part of the EU?
Well, Margaret Thatcher, I'd imagine.
No, the British establishment, because, you see, for them, they always find a hole to go through. They always keep a hole open for themselves, right? And that's why this is a test question I always ask people. Which territory in Europe, which is only a few hundred kilometers from Brussels apart, is not in the EU? And then they guess around and they don't, and I say the Channel Islands, they're not part of the EU. People don't know this.
Yeah, that's right.
And that means all the EU laws and British laws, a lot of the British laws don't apply there because it's owned by the crown, right? And that's why they have, I mean, don't forget that the British islands in the Caribbean, like Bermuda and all the others, are all the most oldest and best tax havens. So don't talk about British, hiding money. They are experts in that.
Well, that's right. David Cameron's father, he made his fortune from exploiting the ability to move cash around that Margaret Thatcher had done. But anyway, look, let's finish with the biggest subject in the world. And that is the Middle East, really, because what happens there really does seem to affect you. You've got the three continents, Asia, Europe and Africa, all meeting there. You've got all the tensions there are around oil and the oil industry. You've also got the religions. You know, you've got Israel, Saudi Arabia, you've got Iran, as well as you've got, the Christian faith in Jerusalem, too, and that part of the world. How do you think things are going down there? I've noticed recently that the intelligence services of Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states have all been openly saying, well, actually, we're siding with Israel. Although we're Arabs, we're really on the side of Israel.
Well, as I, this saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And that means they all have. If it's realistic or not, they think that Iran is their enemy, and therefore they are joining together. That's the explanation for that. That the Saudis, by the way, it's not new. The Saudis have been working with the Israelis since the last 30 years, because the Israelis had an air base in Saudi Arabia, a secret air base there. It's only become official more now. But they have always worked together, right? And because certain things they couldn't do without Saudi help, like, for instance, how were they able to attack when Saddam Hussein was in power, that so-called atomic power plant? How were they able to bomb that unless they were able to refuel in Saudi Arabia? They couldn't refuel in Syria. So, you see, they were always helping each other, and it's become more public now. And also because the Americans are pushing it. But, you know, I just read today that Trump is very angry about Netanyahu because he thinks Netanyahu did the ultimate betrayal by congratulating Biden on the election win. Especially because Trump did everything that the Israelis wanted regarding moving the embassy to Jerusalem and accepting the annexation of the Golan, of the Syrian Golan, and that they can annex the east of the Palestinian lands, all these things, which Trump said okay to, and Netanyahu betrayed him.
So what's going to happen in the Middle East anyway? Do you think that there's going to be a war between Israel and Iran, or is it going to just be almost like a permanent state of tension?
Well, I think it depends. You see, Israel itself never fights a war. You see, were they involved in Syria? No. Are they involved in Iraq? No. They only do some secret stuff, but isn't it interesting that Israel never is part of the so-called coalition of the willing? Never part of that. Israel does not help them. It did not help them in the last 20 years in Afghanistan. You see, the Americans are so stupid because they fight the wars for Israel. But it's not only America, it's all the others who are involved, like the British and others their soldiers are dying for Israel. How stupid can you get? And the Israelis laugh their heads off.
How would they manage to persuade them to do that?
Look, you don't understand the American political system. Those who bribe the most senators and Congress people who pay for their election, they are the ones who own them. And then they do their policies. Do you know that every member of Congress, newly elected member of Congress, is put in a plane and shipped to Israel for a two-week propaganda tour? So they are, from the beginning, they are told what to do, what policy to do towards Israel. And so Netanyahu said many times, don't worry about America. We control America. So they have always controlled America and the policy in the Near East, right?
Yeah, but dodged my question, haven't you? Do you think this is just about keeping a state of permanent tension, or do you think there really will be a fight between the Israelis and the Iranians?
No, because I just explained. They themselves will not fight. The only thing they can do is lure the Americans and the other idiots into a war with Iran. Not themselves, they will not have fight a war because they haven't got a chance. They haven't got a chance against Iran.
Well, I mean, if the Israelis were, I mean, surely if war was to break out, the Americans would be straight over there giving the Israelis a hand.
Well, I don't think so. Why should they? Why do you think they should?
Ever since the October War, 1973, that happened immediately. The Americans were straight away over.
No. All the wars that Israel fought with the Arab neighbors, America was neutral. They were not involved. They did not fight for Israel. Nothing. They just watched it.
Well,
don't remember the USS Liberty thing?
Well, yeah, but that was the previous. That was the Six Day War in 19.
Oh, that was the big war. That was the big war. So the Americans, they don't get involved if Israel starts a war. When Israel attacked Lebanon, the Americans did nothing.
That's true. Anyway, is there any thoughts you'd like to leave us with tonight?
Well, I'm really worried about this whole, that we are being pushed to getting vaccinated, because I go by the opinion that it should be up to each person's decision if he wants to do it or not.
Well, yeah, but that is the case here in the UK. But there's been a lot of persuasion, you know, it's of arm twisting going on.
Yeah, but well, that comes out the same. And anyway, they will force people by doing things like, if you're not vaccinated, you cannot book a hotel room, or you cannot book a flight, or you cannot leave the country, or you cannot come into the country. They will put up all sorts of hurdles so that in the end, the people will say, well, if I want to live like before, I better get a vaccination. I tell you what, if there were no consequences of you not being vaccinated, nobody would get vaccinated.
Well, you still can travel without a vaccine, can't you? If you, for example, you just don't want to have it. It's just there's lots of scaremongering, and people are thinking to themselves, oh, well, I want to make sure I have a vaccine so that if it just in case there's limitations to me traveling.
Well, whatever. If I tell you what will happen is if the people refuse, if more than half of the population doesn't want to get vaccinated, they will increase those hurdles. They will say your children will not go allowed to go into the kindergarten if they don't are not vaccinated, or not to school, or to you can't go to watch football in the stadium. Or they can invent thousands of reasons why you can't join something if you're not vaccinated.
Well, I noticed that there are quite a few musicians in Britain, not least of which is Van Morrison and Eric Clapton, who are absolutely refusing any of that. So they're saying that they won't play at any concerts where there are restrictions on the participants, you know, the viewers in the crowd, you know. So there's a battle. It's going to be a battle. As we watch this battle unfold over COVID and for human freedom, really, whereabouts do you think are good websites, including your own, to go to find keep up with what's really going on?
Well, I can't recommend one website. It's because it's all over the place, you know. Information about certain things are all over the place, and also in the mainstream media, there are some reports where they say how many people got sick or died after vaccinations. So you can also get a lot of information out of the mainstream. You just have to have your antenna open in all directions and look at everything and then do your opinion. Because certainly this is a very important topic, that getting vaccinated or not, and what can be the damage to your body. You see, what they are saying is, and that's why I say it's fascism, what they are saying to you is you do not own your body. You do not own it. You cannot say what happens with your body. They say what happens with your body. And that is absolutely against all principles of freedom, right? And I don't accept that. I'm responsible for my body, and anyway, it is totally logic. They say, what logic is it that if you are not vaccinated, you endanger people who are vaccinated? What kind of a logic is that? It is impossible. If vaccines protect you, Then how can somebody who is not vaccinated endanger you? It's not possible.
Okay, just can you just give us your website, please, Manfred? If you don't want to give, would you? Can you just at least give us one other that is a good one you think to go to have a look?
Well, actually, I what I do today is I look more in YouTube and I search on YouTube because there are many statements being done by doctors and by other people, researchers, who talk about the dangers of vaccinations, you know.
Yeah, there but a lot of those are being censored. YouTube is taking thousands of those down.
I know. That's why you can't say one. Well, actually, Sputnik News and RT, they bring a lot about this. About problems with vaccination, sporadic, but not only that, of course, but that's one of the themes that they always bring, right? And also the television channel of RT, which I'm sure you can see in Britain, right?
And what about your own, what's your web address then?
If you just search for Alles Schall und Rauch, you will get my blog, and you will find my over 5,000 articles I've written in the last 15 years. A lot of them also about vaccine, because I've been going back to 2009. You see, I knew this was going to happen because in 2009 with the swine thing, that was a test. That was a test to see how people react. In 2009, the Swiss government bought 13 million vaccine doses because they wanted to vaccine everybody with two shots. And that was a test. And now they did it. In 2020, they did it. You know. So I knew it was going to happen.
Well, I mean, certainly I can say we were looking at the work of Dr. Andrew Wakefield for most of the last 10 years, and I was scratching my head wondering, well, why is this guy being targeted? Quite a lot of what he's saying makes sense. And rather than actually arguing the points over with him, the press and the establishment seemed to just try to demonize the guy. So they didn't really want to discuss things with him, just blacken his name, and now we know why. Anyway, Manfred Petrich, thanks
very
much. Well,
I can tell you one. We have the same number of doctors in Germany, Austria, and also Switzerland, in the German-speaking part of Europe, which are also huge opponents of this whole COVID thing and the vaccinations. But they are all competent doctors who know what they're talking about, or virologists. So we have the same situation that the media does not let them speak. They are not, if they speak, then they are just, you know, run down and told that they're conspiracy theorists and all that bullshit. So we have the same situation. Also in America, they are the same people who say, doctors, who say that it's wrong to get vaccinated, right? So in each country you have these people, and you have them in Britain, yes, sure, right?
Yeah, well, we've got one of the best in the world in Bath, actually, Dr. Tess Laurie, who's been doing an absolutely fantastic job raising awareness about the use of ivermectin and the mad idea that there is no treatment for COVID needs to be blown out of the water, rather like the HMS Defender off Crimea. Anyway, lovely to speak to you again, Manfred Petrich. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Hope to talk to you soon. Bye-bye.